Well, it's time for the annual Bob Enyart Live Internet Telethon. Help keep Bob Enyart Live on the internet for another year. Help keep Bob's message going out to a worldwide audience, unconstrained by the traditional bounds of the broadcast media. If you like the teaching, if you like the resources, if you believe that this ministry is valuable and necessary in a lost and dying world, please go to the KGov store, sign up for the monthly Bible study, buy some products, arm yourself with some of the best Bible teaching available on the market today. Keep Bob Enyart's message going out to a worldwide audience on the internet for another year.
Intelligent design and DNA. The scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
Fred, you and I have promoted on the air this Answers in Genesis magazine, Answers, with this wonderful article on sixth senses, not only sight, taste, touch, smell, that, but animals that have other senses. And so this is going to be a fun show talking about these.
Bob, I'd actually like to start with a recent science article, if we could, because this is biological material that is older than the dinosaurs, the stuff we've talked about, you know, the soft tissue and dinosaurs.
Yeah, like T-Rex and all those.
Yeah, they found the biological material that is 350 million years old.
350?
Allegedly.
Million?
Million. 350. Biological material.
You said allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly.
I know, Fred. This is just so awesome. The discoveries that are being made are so overwhelmingly supportive of the biblical worldview. We've reported for years now about the never, it's a parade of discoveries of dinosaur soft tissue. And the dinosaurs, they say, died out 70 million years ago. Archaeopteryx, which is not a dinosaur, it's a bird, but Archaeopteryx, they said, was 150 million years old, and they had some biological material in that. You're saying now they have found, you've given me a copy of this.
Yeah, from Science Daily. I like how this article starts out. I mean, it says, though scientists have long believed that complex organic molecules couldn't survive fossilization, some 350 million-year-old remains of these aquatic sea creatures have been uncovered by these scientists.
Wow, 350 million. Now, the date is wrong.
Yeah.
This comes from their presuppositions and their bias against the Creator God and the Bible, God's Word. So they'll do anything. They'll close their eyes as tightly as possible to reject the young earth chronology.
Yeah, they say that this, you know, it's challenging their assumption. Well, the assumption they're talking about is how things could be fossilized. What really challenges their assumption is that this thing's 350 million years old, but they're
right.
Not going to admit that.
No, they would never admit that. So pretty soon they're going to have biological material that's eternal. Eternal life.
It does keep getting older. Like the earth, the age that they kept putting on the age of
right.
the earth.
The earth kept getting older. So when they said, wow, we found in Tyrannosaurus rex bones, T-Rex, we found blood vessels, blood cells, hemoglobin. Now they found in so many different dinosaurs, hadrosaurs and titanosaurs.
And those are only 70
on.
Million years old.
Yeah, 70, 80, mosasaur, 80 million years old. Then Archaeopteryx, 150 million. And lo and behold, it's still there. Biological material. Now, this sea creature is called a crinoid. So these crinoids have this biological material in them. They're also called sea lilies. That sounds like a plant, right?
Yeah, it does.
Sea lily, but it's an animal.
It's an animal.
Yeah, and so they say that they describe how they think all these crinoids, and there's probably millions of them fossilized that we can find. I don't know how many, but there's a lot. And they say how they think their fossils came to be fossils.
That's right. They go on to say there are lots of fragmented biological molecules. We call them biomarkers scattered in the rock everywhere. They're the remains of ancient plant and animal life, all broken up and mixed together. Wow, doesn't that sound like something, maybe some water?
The result of the global flood. And they say that these sea lilies, they appear to have been buried alive in storms quickly, of course. And where do they find them? In Ohio, Indiana, in Iowa, that's big storms.
Yeah, and the key phrase, buried alive. So If this was laid down over millions of years, they'd have to live a really long time to be buried alive.
So, yeah, these are storms. This is rapid. And, Fred, the quote that you read, I think it's sharing something that normally they kept undercover, really, under wraps, that wherever they look, they find biological molecules scattered in rock everywhere. That's significant.
That is.
Because that's not something I learned in school, that when they say these rocks are hundreds of millions of years old, that they have biological material everywhere. I did not know that. But I think now that it is okay in mixed company to admit that dinosaur bones have soft tissue in them, I think the truth is becoming more and more well known that there's biological material everywhere in the geologic column.
And so they looked at this biological material and compared it to modern-day sea lilies, right?
Well, Fred, what would we say as young Earth creationists? We would say that these things didn't live 350 million years ago. They only were killed a few thousand years ago in the global flood. So, of course, living crinoids would have the same kinds of molecules.
That's right. And guess what? That's what they found out. Shocker there, huh?
They do. They went and looked. They got some living ones.
So who's surprised? Who's amazed and awed and who isn't? We are not surprised. This is exactly what we expect.
Right. And the creation worldview, the creation model, is affirmed by scientific discoveries 10,000 times over every year.
Time and time again.
And they are challenged every time. And what is being challenged is not some minor guess that they made 2 weeks ago. What's challenged constantly is their fundamental assumptions.
That's right.
By the actual data.
It's interesting. On the same article, there's a side article. You know, they show you a whole bunch of other ones for that current day.
Right.
And I was looking at that one, and guess where your brain came from?
My brain. I don't know.
Our brains, they came from an animal that has no brain.
Oh,
that's according to the evolutionists. A sea anemone. I got one of those in my saltwater tank. So when I go home tonight, I'm going to look in there and say, hey, my brain came from that, that thing that has no brain. I mean, how silly is that?
Who would have thunk it?
Yeah.
Golly.
So apparently the development genes that are in this anemone are similar to the same development genes that produce our head, you know, when we're developing in the womb.
Yeah.
It's so
Darwinism,
silly.
It's such an absurd storytelling discipline. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's a storytelling. In fact, a famous Darwinist has said that when you take fossils and line them up into some lineage, like horse fossils, he said it's like a bedtime story. It's entertaining. It might even be instructive, but it's certainly not scientific.
Yeah.
And so they tell the silly stories. Like when they look at the genetic sequences for echolocation in bats and whales, they find this identical sequence, which shocks them. So what would they think? Bats evolved from whales? Or whales evolved from bats. They say there's no common ancestor of those two that had this echolocation, yet this wildly unlikely sequence is exact in these two creatures. And so the silly stories they tell are simply silly stories.
Exactly. And you know, there's design features of this anemone that they don't want to talk about, you know, like a symbiotic relationship. You know, I have clownfish that go into the anemone and it protects them, and the clownfish will feed the anemone. If other fish get near the anemone, guess what happens?
They're dead. So it's a symbiotic relationship.
Yes.
And those are hard to describe by Darwinian means, because the first time some fish, a clownfish, comes near a sea anemone, it's going to get killed.
Yeah, and it happened one time in my tank. It was a cardinal fish that's a black and white cardinal. Mm. It looks like Al Davis because it has a scowl on it.
Yeah.
But anyways, that guy got way too close to the finger anemone.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, what a wonderful testimony of design. All the symbiotic relationships we see throughout nature, you know, like the birds that can land on a crocodile that pick food off of it, but it's the only bird it allows in there.
Yeah.
Same with the shark and the cleaner fish. All these examples are wonderful.
Just really, really great.
So, Bob, there's another peer-reviewed article on dinosaur soft tissue published in a peer-reviewed journal.
Yeah,
and
again,
this is Triceratops. So we have another dinosaur. The data keeps piling in.
The band plays on. It just keeps going. This is so fun. So in this journal is Acta Histochemica, and this is a major peer-reviewed journal. And so we'll have to add this to our list of dinosaur soft tissue.
So Triceratops turns out not to be so ancient either.
No.
All these dinosaurs
2013. And Fred, you know what? I'm going to link to this article online because you have to pay over $30 to read the article. You know, we do that so that we can be up to date here at Real Science Radio. But a lot of people can't afford, you know, just to read an article to pay $30-some. But the abstract is there and the photos that are included in the journal are there for you to see. And they are stunning microscopy.
And that'll be it.
DinosaurSoftTissue.com, which is our page on all the dinosaur discoveries.
Yeah, Bob, and boy, it's so frustrating that this paradigm of millions of years is just foisted onto society, onto our kids.
Right? Because the evidence is so strong against it. But, Fred, that frustration, I know I see it all the time. I feel it, too. But I'm also encouraged. I'm seeing the wear on the Darwinist. You know, the Darwin marketing reps like Richard Dawkins and P.Z. Myers and Jerry Coyne and all those guys, mm-hmm. the people that we spar with or even debate here at Real Science Radio, there are so many scientists who are coming out openly and saying, look, the evidence is overwhelmingly against this neo-Darwinism stuff. It's not true. The evidence contradicts it. I think it's becoming a groundswell.
Yeah, we're making a lot of headway. There's a lot more to do, but, you know, that's the beauty of this radio show. Yeah, just today on this show, for example, Bob, you know, a recent article just looked at this biological material from the sea lily that's supposed to be 350 million years old, and there's no way it can be because it's real. It's biological material that matches the same biological material of today's sea lily.
Right, and we've even talked about where they find bacteria in rocks that are supposed to be hundreds of millions of years old, living bacteria even.
Yeah, even living bacteria. Yeah. That's live a long time.
Yeah, it's just also fun. So, Fred, I think there is a groundswell against Darwinism, regardless of the Darwin marketing reps like Eugenie Scott and P.Z. Myers and all. Regardless of the Darwin marketing reps, the real scientists who are doing real work in the applied sciences, they are recognizing that Darwinism is bankrupt. It cannot explain the wonder of living organisms. And in fact, you and I will be doing a show in September. We have our schedule of 2013 shows, our list shows. I love these list shows that we've been doing.
Yeah, and we do them every other month, right?
Yeah, in January, we did list of not so old things. This month, list of peer-reviewed dinosaur soft tissue papers. In May, list of evidence contradicting the Big Bang. July, list of genomes that just don't fit. They don't fit the tree of life and Darwinism. September, the list of scholars doubting Darwin and the Big Bang. That's going to be great. And then November, the list of the fine-tuning of the cosmos. We've been preparing this list of scholars doubting Darwinism for that show in September. And we keep adding names and famous scientists and surveys of thousands and tens of thousands of scholars and scientists doubting Darwinism. It is a groundswell. I am seeing the wear on the Darwin dogma.
Wasn't it even hundreds of thousands of medical doctors?
Hundreds of thousands.
So that's going to be a fun show.
And that's a form of applied science.
That's right. That's right.
But this hasn't come about purely by chance because there has been a concerted effort by many in the creation movement to publicize the evidence against Darwin. Now, you're not going to get that from Nature magazine. They're not going to continue to list all the evidence against Darwin. They're just going to randomly publish articles that contain evidence against Darwin, but they won't admit it.
Like the story we talked about today from Science Daily.
They're not going to admit.
Exactly.
But the creationists have been doing that now for how long has the creation movement been going?
You know, Henry Morris, I think, was really one of the founding fathers, in a way, of the creation movement.
Yeah, the Copernicus.
You know, and that reminds me, he joined the Creation Research Society in 1963. I think he was one of the guys that started it, and it's their 50th anniversary this year.
And that's the group that you're the webmaster for. Half a century ago, CRS started.
Half a century. That's a good way to look at it.
So half a century, and then there's also CMI out of Australia with offices in the U.S.
Creation.com.
And there's Answers in Genesis, Ken Ham. And there's Walt Brown Center for Scientific Creationism.
creationscience.com, I believe.
And then there's ICR. What does that stand for?
Institute for Creation Research.
That's right.
So the big three are CRS, ICR, and AIG. And, you know, Walt Brown, you got to include him because, you know, he's our favorite creation scientist.
That's right.
Speaking of Walt Brown, In the Beginning is such a fantastic book. I think we should talk about that.
That's right.
And it was the second creation book I ever got, and it still remains my favorite.
Yeah.
It's so well put together.
It is my favorite creation book, Dr. Walt Brown, PhD in mechanical engineering from MIT. And by the way, this is our telethon month. And to keep Real Science Radio on the internet for another year, our goal is to raise $25,000. So there may be people listening who would like to donate, one-time donation. That'd be fabulous. Click on our store, donate, or you could click on our science department, get one or a few of Walt Brown's books. They're expensive, but they're fabulous. Hardcover, full color, just fabulous books.
Yeah, highly, highly recommend them.
Yeah, great for homeschooling too, and for adults, anyone who loves science and the evidence for creation and the flood. In the beginning, and we have our audio interviews with Walt Brown, and we have that on audio CDs you pop in your car, or you could download them. It's The Hydroplate Theory and Dr. Walt Brown on the Air. Great shows. So all that is available at realscienceradio.com. Or you can call us, but you'd have to remember my last name. I'm Fred Williams, and I'm Bob Enyart, and our number is 1-800-8-ENYART. So that's 1-800-836-9278.
That's right. Enyart, E-N-Y-A-R-T.
That's right. So that's what's coming up this year, and I think the battle is going very well for the creationist.
It is, definitely. Hey, you've got some DVDs too, Living Fossils. Those are fantastic.
Oh.
Speaking of, you know, sea lilies, these biological remains of fossilized sea lilies.
Carl Werner has produced the best DVDs ever produced on the fossil record.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Evolution, the Grand Experiment, and Living Fossils. Episode 1 and Episode 2.
Yeah, he's great. You've had him on Real Science Radio.
We have. And they're also at our store, beautifully produced DVDs. Fred, I think we need to get to our article on the sixth census.
Yeah. So, Bob, if we turned off the light in the studio in here, would I be able to see you? It could be pitch dark in here.
Right.
I wouldn't see you at all.
No. So our five senses are what? Sight, taste, touch, smell, and hearing. Well, there are a bunch of other senses.
There's a bunch of other senses that, you know, these organisms, these animals have.
Yeah.
You know, I just saw that Bin Laden movie, which I thought was pretty good. And they had to have those
Dark 30.
Yeah.
Okay.
They had to have those night goggle things that see infrared, I believe.
Yeah, right, right.
That's one of the six senses, the heat sensors, right?
Wow. Heat sensors. In fact, some creatures are able to detect a change in temperature. Now, this is startling. Of 1/200th of a degree.
1/200th
of
a
degree Fahrenheit.
Yeah, like, and these pit vipers and pythons. It's amazing.
I mean, the ability that God gave to these creatures. There are spiders. You know how you get a spider on a web and it's sitting there, and if you throw something into the spider's web, it'll jerk like a reflexive action, but then it'll sit there and it won't really go and look at it. Because it figures out it's nothing. But it turns out, I never knew, Fred, until I read this article, how these spiders figure out what's going on. They have these organelles that measure the angles of their exoskeleton. Now,
wow.
Spiders are arachnids.
Yep.
And the joints, like in their legs,
mm-hmm.
imagine the angle of the joints in their legs changing by the slightest, tiniest bit. And they're using that, and they're interpreting that data to figure out what's in the web, and is it worth going to try to eat it
or to capture interesting.
It. That
so
is
just really high-tech motion sensor.
Yeah, it is. My boys and I up in Seattle years ago, we saw this big spider web with a big spider in it. And we thought, wouldn't it be interesting to capture another spider and throw it in the web? So we did. And it started this amazing orchestrated dance like you just couldn't imagine.
Oh, really?
That spider that we threw into the middle, the others hiding off on the edge, it moved for a tenth of a second and it realized where it was and it was going to be eaten. So it stood still as could be for a long time, like maybe 20 minutes. we stood watching this. And when it decided to take off, it ran as fast as its legs could take it. And that other spider went right after that thing. And that poor spider.
Did he get him?
He got him.
He got him?
It was just amazing.
Knowing you guys, you probably did about 30 more times.
It was just something to see. And we've done many shows on the amazing engineering feat that is a spider web and a spider's and their silk. And it's all so astounding. But these motion sensors, this is an extraordinary capability for such a tiny creature.
So, Bob, I'm going to try the next one.
What is that?
Well, I'm trying to do echolocation.
Hurt my ears.
Yeah.
Oh, echolocation. What a good point. A bat has to emit a tremendously loud sound.
It does, actually. And its ears are finely tuned to pick up what reactions to the sounds they want to hear.
In fact, the sound has to be so loud because the bat survives by hearing echoes.
Yeah. Kind of like the Doppler effect, Bob. So as sound waves bounce back toward the bat, the frequency shifts.
Oh, yeah.
So he knows from that frequency shift very accurately where something is.
And whether a moth or a fly or whatever is coming toward him or moving away from him.
Yep.
When we're out with our kids, we went to a hockey game recently, Cutthroats in Denver, and we're walking outside next to the Coliseum in Denver, and we're noticing the echo, and it's fun. And, you know, my son Dominic, we're yelling things at the wall. We hear the echo. Well, imagine if you want to hear an echo from a moth, an echo off of a moth. Imagine how loud a sound you need and how sensitive your eardrums have to be. Mm-hmm. But you would go deaf if that loud sound hit your eardrums as it's coming out of your mouth. So God designed these bats so that they could emit these incredibly loud sounds at the same time protect their ears. What an awesome God
we have. Oh, it's amazing. Another one I love is the electric sensors. So these sharks, they can detect electrical fields down to a billionth of a volt. I mean, that's less than the tick on your watch. You know, if only these people knew this in the movie Jaws, they could have taken off their wristwatch and thrown it, you know, and hopefully the shark goes for the wristwatch.
I mean,
that's amazing. I didn't know that. You know, and water, best for creatures in water because it's salt water, right? Mm-hmm. Salt water, it has ions. It's, you know, electric fields are going to be a lot easier to detect in salt water. But who would have known? They detect fish this way.
Yes, because when a fish moves, its brain sends out tiny nerve impulses to the muscles that contract. And so the shark is able to sense the electrical field disturbance from the fish's brain.
Yeah.
It's just astounding. Sixth senses.
That's amazing.
Are
I never knew
awesome.
That.
When you read these creation magazines, you really learn science.
This is really cool stuff.
Another one of these sixth senses is magnet sensors. So many creatures use some kind of magnetism to survive. In fact, Fred, didn't a famous evolutionist talk about magnets and Darwinism?
Yeah, remember Haldane's Dilemma, the Haldane character?
Yeah, we did a whole show on that.
He made a prediction of evolution about a magnet and the wheel and all that stuff, and if it could be formed by slight modifications.
He said that it would falsify Darwinism. It would prove it to be false if we ever found a magnet or a wheel inside of any living organism.
Yeah.
Now we know there's like quadrillions of such things if you add up each instance of them all over the planet. And his argument was that, well, a magnet is either going to work or it's not going to work. You can't have something that's almost magnetic but not quite.
Yep.
And so if you have a system for survival that's based on an ability of magnetism, it's either going to work or not work. You can't have halfway toward almost benefiting from magnetism. And so Haldane said, if we ever found that, then that's proof. Well, guess what?
Yeah, it's like when they found that rotor and stator, you know, in the E. coli bacteria.
Yes, in the flagellum.
That's right.
Plenty of wheels and gears and bushings and all that stuff.
There's really good animation on that in Unlocking the Mysteries of Life, which is also available at your store.
That's right. Just click on the science department, realscienceradio.com. Click on the store. Unlocking the Mysteries of Life is one of the best.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
And it shows that motor. Yeah, and there's a guy in that video. He was an author of an evolution book for colleges and high schools that he wrote in the 1960s. And intelligent design is what convinced him of creationism.
It's
a great video. I highly recommend it. It's really interesting. Yeah. And again, they've got a great animation of that bacterial flagella motor.
That is really super. And there's a second DVD that we offer in our store called Programming of Life by Dr. Don Johnson, who's a friend of this program. He's been on the show. And both of those together, if you like cellular biology, if you get excited by seeing how God designed a living cell, then you'll want both of those. Unlocking the Mysteries of Life and POL, it's Programming of Life. Such great DVDs.
And I wonder if Haldane would, you know, now that his prediction is falsified, of course he's dead, but I wonder if it would have changed him. I doubt it.
No.
Because it's a religion to them.
It's a religion. They are the Darwin marketing reps.
And that's a good phrase. I mean, it's true.
You got to watch out. To trust a salesman today is dangerous because the ethics are just disappearing. They're vaporizing. And it's partly because so many people think there's no God. There's no judgment day. You do whatever feels good.
That's right. They're not accountable to anybody.
Yeah. Question authority. Darwinism, we're just animals. So why not lie to people? Well, these Darwin marketing reps are liars. They lie, and that's why so many people are deluded into having this high confidence level for evolution. And so these magnet sensors, you take a pigeon and you bring it to a strange location. You put it in a cage and cover it. You transport it far away. Fred, they find their way home.
They find their way home. That's right.
That is just so super, the way God made them. So that they've got this three-dimensional map of the world that the pigeon can move within. It could detect its location in all three dimensions. God is an amazing God.
That's right. And even in butterflies, right? They go back to the same tree.
Oh, from New Hampshire. A little butterfly. It weighs. It's just
That tiny little brain.
Astounding thing. And so, Fred, that is a great list of the kinds of sixth senses that the Creator gave to creatures on Earth.
That's right. As humans, we don't have a lot of these. It'd be nice if we did, like the sonic one. I think the only time I'd be able to tell where anything was if I screamed was in a dark room and I startled somebody. And I know where they're at because they'll rustle or they'll make a noise.
Right, exactly. But these creatures can do all these things.
Yeah.
So thank you, Fred Williams, for Real Science Radio. Another great episode. And our website, realscienceradio.com. Our telethon, our goal is $25,000. We need your help. Please, if you enjoy the show, if you think it will help other people, please give to realscienceradio.com. May God bless you.
Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. I'm talking about.